You're tuned into The Curious Couple for the Curious Ear with your hosts, TNA. Get ready to have your curiosity piqued while exploring what it's like to live out fantasies with this fun, fit, and sexy duo.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is TNA. He's T, I'm A.
Today we have a special guest on our show. He's a relationship coach, and he has a podcast called Lasting Love Connection, Luis Congdon. Welcome to the show, Luis.
Awesome to be here. Thank you, TNA.
So we connected being fellow podcasters, and Luis has a really cool podcast that I started listening to and had one of my favorite authors on, and we got to talking, and it seems like there's a lot of synergy there. He's got a lot of similar ideas and even more experience than us dealing with people or speaking or coaching people in the lifestyle and swinger lifestyle. What am I trying to say?
it sounds like other all types of relationships, right, which I think is really cool because you don't meet a lot of people that aren't in the lifestyle that are still comfortable and accepting of.
And open to it.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool. I'm excited to talk to you.
Me too.
So thanks for being on the show. Why don't you give us a little background, tell the folks a little bit more about you?
Definitely. Well, the first thing, thank you so much, you the listener, for spending some time with us right now, and to both of you for having me on the show. I want to let you know that one of the reasons why I came on here is because there's just a lot of misunderstanding about why people decide to have a non-monogamous relationship and pursue to have a variety of love styles, whatever that may be, poly, relationship, anarchy, you know, you can go on all day, swinger, lifestyle, and it keeps going as I've learned. And relationships can be as unique as the couple, you know, and they can create whatever they want. And I find that to be incredible and amazing. So I started teaching relationship courses at the age of 24 when I landed a job, really kind of by accident. I went to an interview and went through the whole thing, and I didn't want the job. It was not the job I wanted, and they really liked me, and they said, we have a different position for you, which was working with married couples, and I got a job doing that as part of the nation's largest research project looking at how marital education courses impact families and how those courses impact mom and dad, and will it trickle down to the children? And I can say that indefinitely it did impact the children, and it impacted the parents.
Yeah.
So we've got to be honest with you, Luis. We're looking up what relationship anarchy is.
I just had to Google it. I've never heard that term.
Yeah, well, that's news to us.
So for anybody who's listening, you know, I know that if you're a listener, you're either curious about opening your relationship to something else other than what everyone considers normal. And when I say considers, I really think that people have also a relationship is as unique as the couple. Relationship is its own culture. So we have a lot of misconceptions about normalcy as it is. Relationship anarchy, what it really strives to do is it says there isn't a hierarchy in my relationship with my partner. So, you know, if I have a relationship with my spouse, even married couples say that there isn't a hierarchy. So if I'm dating somebody, I really try to relate and be the same with both partners. And to some degree, I don't completely understand how that works, but I can tell you I've seen some really amazing couples who call themselves relationship anarchists, and I've seen a tremendous amount of love. The whole idea is that, you know, we get locked into the secondary, primary, tertiary, and so on levels of dating. And for some people, it really just doesn't work because you can feel incredibly excluded when that happens.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So we have found, and we were talking a little bit before the show, that in our relationship, TNA's relationship, we, you know, got into this pretty early, but we have only found it to enrich our relationship and challenge us in ways and I guess force us to communicate, but really it kind of revealed the fact that we could communicate very well, and it's been unlike any relationship I've had previous to this, and I
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's not just like, oh, I have this great relationship. We communicate so well. No, you have to.
Right.
So it's not like you can just have an off night and, well, we just weren't really communicating. No, you really have to. So right. It forces you to, even when you're uncomfortable or are having feelings that you may not normally want to share with your partner, you have to get through it and move past it. And so I think that has helped our relationship in other aspects, not just the lifestyle stuff.
Right. And Luis was saying before this, when we were chatting about how that, you know, communication is what he's seen has been a core principle of relationships that work, no matter what type of relationship. Wasn't that so, Luis?
Yeah. And furthermore, it's really how we do the communication. And, you know, whether you're monogamous or non-monogamous, the key is how you communicate, right? Are you showing affection, appreciation, attention, acknowledgement, those key levels of positivity? And are you, you know, really involved and willing to tell the truth? Is Dr. Gay Hendricks talks about telling the minute truth, right? Telling your partner moment by moment what's really going on for you and being incredibly transparent. Couples that are in a non-monogamous relationship can't really get away with that as easily as a couple that is in a monogamous relationship. Now, some people might argue with that, and that's fine. That's just been my opinion, that if you're really going to do non-monogamy, then you're going to have to, like, oh my God, I'm jealous and I can't hide that, and I'm frustrated that you're going on a date tonight and I'm home with the kids tonight, or oh my God, I feel like you've been sleeping with her more, and what does that say about me? Like, you have to talk about that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's something we really don't know anything
yeah.
about.
Yeah, just to be clear, we're not experiencing
because
any of that.
I think the feeling I was having in my stomach, I looked at A just now and I could tell she was probably having the same feeling, going, okay, wait, you're going to watch the kids and I'm going to, no, yeah. That probably wouldn't work.
No, but we don't know. And you never know. 20 years from now, right. That could be our reality.
Could.
Mm-hmm. And that's great for the people that can do that. We're just not there.
Well, and I think what we found being around this lifestyle is how accepting it is other people's opinions and the way they live their lives, or their views on relationships. It's just a super accepting environment. Yeah. You know, and
like he said, every relationship is unique to that couple. And I would say that that's true even when you're in a lifestyle setting. I mean, we're all there obviously because we have this different way of thinking, but there's still, if there's 100 couples there, there's 100 ways to do it.
Yeah.
Everybody's different.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing that a lot of people, they try to get into a non-monogamous relationship and they try to pick up a guidebook. And every single book that you pick up will give you some generalities. And the key thing that all of them are going to say is you better nail down your communication. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of couples, they have to create, you know, a fair amount of rules, at least initially.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's part of what inspired us to do this. We shared this, our stories with friends, and, you know, one, we could see how intrigued they were. But two, it's for those, you know, we realized our friends had an interest in this. And so it's like, well, we could share our story. We could share what we had to navigate and how we had to get through it. And so to give people an idea of how they could do it themselves and what, you know, maybe not the how-tos, but at least learn from our mistakes or our, mm-hmm. you know, things that succeeded. And it was kind of to open the door for others. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Luis, you had mentioned that you had tried polyamory. Is that is that correct?
Yeah. So when I first, you know, I was a really shy guy growing up, and I also was somebody who felt kind of deep sense of being spiritual and wanted to become a monk really early on in my life. Well, not early on in my life compared to some people, but in my 20s, I really felt committed to the idea that I'm going to become a monk. And I think to some regard, that was a way for me to kind of sublimate or hide my own sense that I was afraid of desire and I was afraid to feel desire around women. And coming from a very Catholic background, and just our culture is saturated with, you know, Protestant theology and belief systems, whether or not we know it, it's in there. And so, you know, when I met a woman early on, when I first started dating at the age of 24, I was dating somebody else, just kind of didn't even know we were really dating. We just kind of started going out, and I'm like, wait, I'm dating. you know. And then I met another woman and I went out with her, and then I called the other woman and said, hey, you know, I met somebody tonight and I don't know how you feel about it, but I want to let you know that dating is so new for me. I would really love to be able to date different people and do so so that I can kind of get to know people and really get to understand myself through this process. How do you feel about that? And she said, I think that's fine. I think you probably really need that. The other woman I had told, you know, that I was going out with someone and that, you know, that I would also like to get to know her, and they were both okay with it. And I was just amazed how well honesty could work. I was scared as hell to, you know, tell each of them what was going through my mind and my heart. And yet I found that people can be incredibly receptive when you're just really honest about yourself.
Is that considered polyamory? Because then to me, that just sounds like dating.
It really depends on how you describe it, because, you know, when I've studied this stuff, and there's people that know it way better than I do, that I don't profess to be a professional in these areas. I just say that I've looked at it and I've studied it, mm-hmm. and tried to hold an open mind. And for me, I described it as being poly because I was dating two women and I wanted to fall in love with both of them. And in my ideal world, it would have gone forward and all of us would have fallen in love with each other. And for some people, that is described as polyamory.
That's where when you start all falling in love. That's
what's the name of that show that was
polyamory?
On
Yeah.
Did you see that show on Showtime?
Was it Showtime or HBO? Showtime.
I think it was Showtime.
Showtime, Polyamorous and Married, and I've had Michael McClure on my show.
Oh, okay.
Cool. That was somebody I had in mind for trying to contact. I think that's really interesting.
Which one was he?
He is the husband of Kamala Devi.
Yeah, like the main couple.
Which season, though?
They were the ones that were, remember they had the other couple move in with them?
Oh, yes.
Well, I'll be happy to connect you guys if that's
that would be cool. I was obsessed with that show.
Yeah, that was pretty entertaining.
So you know, I wanted to become polyamorous because my style is I don't really date. I fall in love and I want to be fully engaged in being in love with the person.
That makes sense. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. That's cool. The whole polyamory thing, I think it's so fascinating to me because it's way out of my comfort zone.
That's so crazy. That's awesome.
Because for us, like, it's about sex. Like, there's no, I mean, we've made some friends. There's some friend connections, but I don't foresee us ever crossing that catching feelings.
Well, I think we catch feelings, but it's not, there's no, like, love involved. It's strictly a lustful,
right.
You know. Sins of the flesh type feeling.
Yeah, we're total sluts.
Well, but I think with that being said, there is this greater emotional like connection on the back end that we have together.
Between us, sure. But that I think that's why that fascinates me so much, because they're falling in love with multiple people. Yeah. That just blows my mind.
Yeah, that is.
Like, this is work. Why would you want to do that with multiple people?
it's so funny because I've heard people in the poly community say, "How could you just like have sex with someone?"
Right. That's so funny. I mean, everybody's different.
Yeah. We all get to make it up as we go.
Yeah. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I would just think it would be so being transparent to one partner, I guess if you're transparent with one, you can be transparent with multiple ones, but that's a lot of feelings to navigate. That to me sounds like a lot of work. That would be exhausting.
Yeah.
You better be prepared to talk a lot about what's going on for you.
More talk than sex.
Sure.
Yes.
So this may be switching gears a little bit, but I'm just thinking about like what you do and your counseling, relationships. I'm assuming a lot of them are coming to you needing help communicating, like they're in some kind of struggle, or do you talk to a lot of married couples that are looking for ways to communicate with each other? Is that kind of?
Definitely. Generally most couples come to me because they're stuck.
Okay.
You know, and all relationships in my experience, at some point you reach a place where it just feels tough. You know, your partner wants you to change and you don't want to make that change, or you want your partner to make that change and they don't want to. But there's at some point where you're like two fists bumping, you know, and that's really the growth point. Dr. Harville Hendricks really outlines relationships as having, you know, different tiers, right? First is the romantic infatuation stage. We're perfect. I love you. Oh my God, I feel like I've known you forever. You know, I wish I would have met you sooner. I feel like so just myself when I'm with you. To the next place, like, is, oh my God, you remind me of my mom, or you're constantly challenging me, or you're so difficult and challenging. Why can't you change? And that is the place where we have growth. And then, you know, there's the next phase where what he calls paradise regained. And most couples come to me when they're in that frustration, tough phase. And communication is such a key piece to getting out of that. And when we talk about communication, I want to clarify that we are always communicating. I consider myself a communication expert for couples. So I'm not looking for them to communicate. I'm looking to see if they know how to properly communicate. You know, when your partner speaks, do you receive what he or she's saying? Do you acknowledge them? Do your eyes roll? Do you look away? Does your body close? There's a lot that's going on with that. And that's what I look for.
So you've actually counseled couples who are swingers? Is this true?
I've never counseled couples who were swingers.
Because he doesn't have to. They're happy.
I think part of it too is that one of the things that I've heard from swingers is that it's incredibly challenging to find a counselor that accepts that. I've had people come and talk to me and say, hey, you know, because we're friends, I don't counsel my friends. This is usually considered a conflict of interest in the therapy world. Mm-hmm. And if I'm your friend, but then I'm not your partner's friend or whatever it might be, it's challenging. And it can be a little too personal. You know, then I see you and I just got done counseling you, but then we're at the grocery store or we're hanging out at a party and you just got in a fight. And it's like, Luis, tell us what to do. I've made that mistake of counseling friends. But here's the thing. I've seen couples, they're struggling, and they go to a normal type of counselor, and the counselor says, well, you guys need to close the relationship back up. You guys are doing this because you're not close and you need to work on your relationship and, you know, maybe this and that. But essentially, most counselors think that you're doing it as a cop-out.
Mm-hmm. Right. You're looking for something more outside your relationship to fulfill needs that aren't being met inside the relationship.
Well, but I don't know that I would necessarily disagree with that advice to close it up, because if you're having issues like that, you probably should kind of check into home base for a little while.
Yeah.
I know if we were having struggles, the last thing I would want to do is watch you have sex with someone else.
That's a good point.
So it's probably not bad advice.
That's fair enough.
The most common sense advice, you know, around that is, if you two aren't solid, then you probably shouldn't pursue this yet.
Yeah.
Right. For sure.
And, you know, the reason why I came on this show is because I want couples to know that whatever you're going through, my expertise works. It doesn't matter what kind of relationship love style you have. The skills necessary to make any relationship function are the same. If my dad comes to me, if a child comes to me, and I turn away while they're talking to me, I'm communicating. I don't care what you have to say, you know, and that's applicable to any relationship. It's just, it's more intense in an intimate partnership.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
True. So I'm curious, and this may just be a judgment on your part, but how many of those couples that you counsel that are in monogamous relationships, do you feel like their communication issues come back to being unable to be transparent about their sexual desires? Or, you know, like, I guess what I'm trying to make a comparison to, like, what you and I and our transparency, or I'm sorry, I'm looking at T, you know, like, we're able to communicate, you know, I'm having sexual desires for this woman, you know, like, how much of a issue is it with monogamous relationships that they can't communicate those things? Does that make sense?
Well, you know, it makes total sense. And, you know, if you look at statistically speaking, something like 30 to 40% of marriages have infidelity. So it's pretty high up there. And there's emotional cheating and there's, you know, physical, sexual types of cheating. And there's different levels of all of those, right? But all that translates to me and to the professionals, at least as I view it, is that we will naturally feel a draw or a pull towards another person, right? And how we choose to deal with that can really define the relationship. And most people don't want to say, I'm attracted to this person. Most people aren't open to say, okay, and what do you, you know, tell me a little bit more about that. Because curiosity, sometimes we discover, I'm attracted to this person, but I don't really want to kiss them. I just, God, they're so gorgeous. Or I really want to make out with them. Or I feel attracted to them because I'm pissed off at you. You know, so it can really, you know, what I would advise couples is, can you do what these non-traditional couples are doing? And that isn't to say open up your relationship. What I'm saying is, can you talk about subjects that normally seem to be taboo? And if you want to be a happy couple, you better be able to talk about pretty much anything, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, especially, I'm just thinking of me personally, if I was in a relationship and I was like, man, I'm really interested in, you know, watching people have sex in front of me, but God, I can't tell her. Mm-hmm. On some level, I'm going to probably find someone to have that conversation with, you know, whether it's a buddy or somebody at work or, you know, a woman at work or, I mean, when ultimately that could be broadening your horizons in your relationship and maybe, oh gosh, she's got the same thought. Like, that's how we kind of figured this out. You know, we just started down this path of being open about porn or being open about, you know, people watching or being exhibitionists.
But not everybody's open to that. And I can see how that would be an issue. And I mean, I totally get how that leads people to cheating and having, like you said, emotional affairs. I didn't even really think about that. But if they know that they can't talk to their wife about it, they're probably talking to somebody about it.
Totally. Well, and we kind of had this conversation in a previous episode where, we talked about, for us, we got into this very early into our relationship, into the lifestyle, into the, and we didn't jump into having sex with other people, but just being in the environment, and we kind of questioned how someone who's been married for 30 years would do, you know, then get into it after not doing it. So 30 years of not swinging to swinging. And I feel like, you know, I don't know, it's a little tougher for me to imagine going 30 years and not, maybe they did always express all of their thoughts and feelings and emotions, but I think it was easier for us because we started expressing those from the jump.
Yeah.
So it, you know, I couldn't imagine expressing those and then sitting on them for 30 years before we did anything.
Yeah. I've seen some amazing couples in relationship anarchy and polyamory in lifestyle that I deeply admire and would go to them for advice to understand, because one of the things that those successful couples, just like couples that are in monogamous relationships too, is they're willing to look at, you know, their shadow, so to speak, and talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I, you know, we have friends that do another podcast, We Got a Thing, and they actually put us on their podcast or a recording from a previous one.
Asking that question.
Yeah, asking that question. And I'm kind of backtracking on what I just said because it almost sounds like negative about doing it after being married for 30 years. But it just, to me, I think is a testament to how good somebody's relationship must be. I guess I have a hard time even wrapping my mind around that ability to be with someone for so long. And maybe it's because I've been in a relationship that didn't work, a marriage that didn't work, where I couldn't express those things.
Yeah, so. See, this is where we convince T that not all relationships are like the one he had with his ex-wife.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah. So
he still thinks all marriages are like that.
No, that's not true. I just think all marriages I enter are like that. No, I'm just kidding.
But I think that when you have a strong relationship foundation, and like he said, you know, when you have that communication, that's everything. And, you know, what if you told me tomorrow, I mean, I'm trying to think of something just off the wall. What if you told me you wanted to have a polyamorous relationship?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be, whoa, okay, give me a minute.
Yeah.
But we would work our way through it and find a way to
that's true.
Embrace it. So I think it comes down to your foundation.
So let's change it up and go to something that you were asking us in the pre interview conversation. So you don't understand there being a distinction between, or you think Definitely. There's a distinction between swingers and lifestyle?
So, yeah. So, you know, I have some good friends who are lifestylers, and I've gone to a few well, I guess there was sex involved, but I wasn't involved in the sex. But I went to like a nightclub or something like that. Mm-hmm. And just some really amazing people. I mean, you've got people who work at Microsoft, who you name it. There's people in the lifestyle. Actually, in fact, honestly, most of the people in the lifestyle community I found were like geniuses. I mean, one guy I know, he's like a VP of some large company. And you go to his house and it's just a huge house, and he's one of the most kind, giving people I've ever met. You know, another person I know is a professor, I know a teacher. I didn't meet a single person that had like a minimum wage job. I'm not saying anything about that. I'm just saying that most people assume that, oh, they're, you know, those are low lives. But a lot of these people are incredibly respected in their community. They just don't openly tell people about their lifestyle.
Ooh, yeah.
Because it's not accepted. True. You know, if I was a lawyer and I opened up, hey, this is what I do, you know, good luck showing up to court.
Yep. Yeah.
Right, right. But I mean, you know, there's people in lifestyle that are in politics and they're well known, but nobody really knows except their close community. And one thing that I found within the lifestyle community is people are incredibly bonded and they're very close and protective of each other, which was amazing. You know, yeah. So I had a lot of respect for that. And when I saw your guys' show, I was like, I want to come on there because I want to help this community have a space and have a voice, and maybe one day make it so that they can show up to a work party and bring both their partners, and it's not a shameful thing, you know. But here's the thing is I went and asked people, hey, you know, what's the difference between a swinger and a lifestyler? And the clearest answer I got is, well, we're a tighter knit community. We don't just have sex with anyone. We have sex within our community. And we're not like poly people because we're not interested in falling in love with each other, but we want to care about each other. And if we needed each other's help, you know, maybe we would help each other out. But it was still kind of confusing to me.
I like that. I like that description. I think that that's probably where that came from. Just lifestyle. Like, this is who we are. And we have this community of people. For me, I think it just comes down to, it's just a word. I don't like, and I think we talked about this probably on our first podcast, I don't like the word swinger. And I think just because of the negative connotation that it has. And
I think it's an old term.
Yeah. Well, and when I think swinger, I think of, you know, the fishbowl and the keys, and you, and it sounds very, I don't know. Like you said, like just have sex with whoever. And I don't know that we've ever met a couple that is truly like that just shows up to have sex with random people and goes home. It's more about building friendships, and networking.
Those people are definitely out there. I think we're probably drawn more to the people like us.
Yeah, probably. You know,
because we've heard stories. We've heard stories from people having experiences that we wouldn't want.
Yeah.
But I think we're drawn more to just this lifestyle, this open, accepting, non-judgmental friends.
I think that was what I was trying to get at. Yeah.
Right.
Like just the open-minded. I thought you were about to say something.
No, I was just
letting you finish. Open-minded, you know, being in an environment with, like our last experience when we went down to a house party, there wasn't any sex happening. I mean, it wasn't about that. It was just, it could have been, and it probably should have been if you asked T, but, it was more about making new friends and meeting people, these like-minded people. And so I think that's why I'm more comfortable with the word lifestyle.
Yeah. So this is my take on it. I think they're one in the same, and it's just, you know, I think swinger is kind of an old term. Somebody who's not in the lifestyle, who maybe has a judgment or a prejudice against somebody who swings, mm-hmm. they look at them, they go, that's a swinger. Even if they, I don't think it really matters what the situation is. If they're having sex with somebody other than their spouse, mm-hmm. they are a quote-unquote swinger, and they don't really understand what the lifestyle is about. And I think swingers are in the lifestyle, mm-hmm. and the lifestyle, once you get into it, like when we first got into it, we're like, oh, these people are just having sex with anybody in here. And we, the more we got to know these people, we're like, no, wait a second. Those people having sex over there came together. Yeah. They're married. They're just here to have sex with each other. And, you know, we just realized that it is more just this environment. And I find it, do we know anyone who goes, yeah, I'm a swinger? No. They say I'm in the lifestyle.
And that, you know, that reminded me of another important point. There's a lot of people, quote unquote, in the lifestyle that don't have sex with other people.
That's true.
So I think if you, like, Wikipedia the word swinger, it would probably say that you have sex with someone who's not your partner.
Right.
So maybe that's the big difference. I don't know.
Yeah.
When we didn't have sex with other people for probably a year. Yeah. Didn't think we ever would.
Right.
So I don't know. But for me, it's just, I don't like the word.
Yeah. So I guess my answer, Louise, would be that I don't know that they're really any different. It's just a matter of, you know, I think the perspective of somebody outside of the lifestyle refers to those people as swingers. And if you're a swinger in the lifestyle, you just say, I'm in the lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I think that's really the difference between the two. And that's just my understanding. But then again, we're not totally experienced.
Yeah.
We've only been at it a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing that I found out too, is that those titles are used as kind of a vague way to at least create a sense of, I'm not like that. Yeah. I'm not monogamous, or I'm not that type of relationship. But then whenever you study any relationship, what you find is that each relationship is unique to the dynamic of these two individuals coming together to create one thing, which is that one relationship that they share. You know, when I first started studying polyamory, and I'm heavy into research, you know, empirical research, reading, and looking at also other types of research, if they have scientific or psychological research. And, you know, when you start talking about non-monogamous relationships, there's really not a whole lot of research done by PhDs and universities. It's not a big interest. But here's what I found.
Those people are deviants.
I have a strong disdain for anybody who labels something without at least looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was in a relationship for 4.5 years with a woman who, you know, I co-parented her our eight-year-old at the time. And, you know, he was close to 13 when we broke up. And one of the biggest things that separated us is she wanted to open up the relationship. And I just was like, hell no. Like, that does not work for me. And after we broke up, I really had to say, you know, was my rigidity around this subject, you know, it was one thing when I was first starting to date and I wanted to kind of fall in love with two different women and I had a romantic idea about it. It was a whole nother thing when I was living with somebody, we were co-parenting a child, we own a home, we had a dog. Like, it was very different. Like, what, you want to go on a date with another guy? Like, no, you know, so it was very different. It's very easy to be romantic, have romantic idealism about anything. So mm-hmm. anybody wishing to approach this lifestyle or polyamory or anything, you've got to know that it's very different. You don't just get married and live happily ever after. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, she wanted to open up the relationship. I was like, no. She started kind of going on mini dates with people, just small little dates, but just saying, I'm hanging out with a friend. But then I'd be like, who the hell goes and hangs out with a friend at a winery and comes home like at 10 p.m.? And you told me you guys were just going to like get together for like, you know, a small meal together. And so it really like, it triggered me heavily, and it really kind of created some distance for us. So after that relationship ended, I went on to really study that because I didn't want to hold that against her or anybody else. And what I ended up coming up and finding, because I didn't know anybody when we broke up who lived like that. So I just thought it didn't know. What I ended up finding was that there was a lot of incredible couples that were doing this. Just they don't openly speak about it really. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, wow, you guys communicate in the way that I think you should communicate. Totally open, confronting your fears, talking about everything, appreciating each other, really being committed to creating love and evolving and deepening that, you know, aspect of yourselves together, and utilizing a relationship as a conduit for that. So I really discovered that, oh, wait, it's okay. You know, like, it's okay that people have different love styles.
Totally. You know, and what's something that people really, well, don't understand or can't wrap their minds around, but I know for me, when we go away and we have these wild adventures and, you know, sex with groups of people or whatever we're doing, I, and A can attest to this, even on the ride home or for like the next week, I am super appreciative of her. Like, I'm, it's like my love for her is deepened, my like appreciation for her is deepened, and I mean, she even says, "What? Gosh, we just need to go somewhere and, you know, have a wild time." And you know, you'll
like
make
once a month,
and I'll come back and just be gaga about her because I'll just appreciate her so much.
You know, a lot more. A lot of people think that love is something that should you share with your intimate partner, and there's a certain type of love that you only share with them. And for some people, that works. For other people who have a different perspective, they believe that love aimed anywhere is love aimed everywhere. So love is not something that can be cut or split. It's something that exists and pervades everything.
That's good. I like that.
And you guys aren't doing this for love. So, you know, you can tell by my language and the way that I am is I'm very committed to feeling love and being in love. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you guys are saying, hey, you love doing that. It doesn't mean you're falling in love with the person, but mm-hmm. you love doing that and you find enjoyment. And I receive joy from knowing that you get that, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a word for that too, right? I cannot think of compersion, right? Yeah. Compersion means to receive joy from your partner's joy.
I have that.
Yeah, that's actually a word for that, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would say that would describe you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, because I get more enjoyment out of his enjoyment in those environments, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid that, oh, you know, if you go sleep with someone else or if you go on a date with someone else, then you're going to take the love away from me and you're going to be happy and I'm going to be upset, which happens. And you know, couples deal with that. There are some people that are really committed to this idea of compersion, which is I'm going to learn to be happy for you when you're happy. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was really cool when I learned about that. Like, wow, trying to practice happiness for your partner's happiness. That sounds awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important
in
a relationship for sure. So I'm just kind of curious, like, where do you, I could probably talk to you for an hour about how you counsel couples, but like, what would you say if you had to sum it up in like a tip or two, like, what do you tell couples to work on or focus on or change if they're having problems with communication?
Definitely. You know, I have three things that I look at for couples. And one is, are you deeply curious and interested to learn about your partner? Every really awesome couple I've ever met says every day I get to learn something new about my partner. The research calls this love mapping. Love mapping is your ability to create a map of your partner's internal world. Who are they? What are their dreams, hopes, and fears? And over time, we forget to update that map. And what happens is if we don't update that map, very much like if we don't have an up-to-date GPS system, Google leads us somewhere else. And we're going, oh, no, this is not good. I missed that whole meeting. And that can happen with our partners. We don't update information, and then we get disconnected. So having a consistent desire to learn about your partner and update the information and taking notes of who they are. You know, so have you guys ever been in kind of like, it's starting to get kind of heated and an argument's about to ensue, and one of you cracks a joke that you know the other person will think it's funny, and they laugh, and it bursts the tension?
Yeah, that's probably happened.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you guys do that a lot without even knowing it, and because you guys have a great sense of humor. And
we don't fight a lot, and that could be why.
Yeah.
So what that is I don't know you guys, so I wouldn't be able to create a funny joke if you were upset with me or if something was going on. So the only way that we can do that is having a really good drawn out map of my partner. So that's why having a map is important. And I'm more than happy to share with your audience a love map game that they can play, and it's a PDF that they can download, as well as 47 awesome date night ideas, which leads to number two. If couples really aren't having the best of time, they need to start scheduling date night and try to find ways to have fun or find fun in their relationship. We are naturally drawn to that which makes us feel good. If our relationship doesn't make us feel good, we're going to pull apart from it. So we've got to start injecting more fun to it. And then lastly, the last thing, and it's so important, is focusing on the positive things that we love about our partner and then saying it to them. Research has shown that when we think about our relationship 50% negatively and talk about it in a negative way to our friends, family, and so on, that is a huge indicator that we are heading towards breaking up or divorcing. So what we can do to change that is begin to start noticing what we appreciate and then start talking about it. I want to just give you a quick little example. I have a friend who constantly complains to me about his partner, complains nonstop. And I just got done traveling for 7 months. I went through Asia, 5 countries in 4 months. Awesome. And nonstop, you know, I would get an email or I get a text message. And then I've been traveling through the U.S. for 2 months. And I said to him recently, you know, I haven't really seen you or your girlfriend for 7 months. I've been talking to you. But frankly, a part of me doesn't want to see her because I've heard so many bad things. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's doing, is he's injecting poison into his relationship and convincing everyone else that it's bad. And then he's affirming it for himself. Mm-hmm. So if you're in that space, I want you to start thinking, what's one positive thing that my partner did for me this week, last week, this month? And then go tell them and do that repeatedly. And then you could totally transform a relationship by doing that.
Yeah,
I agree with that. In my previous marriage, I realized the relationship was over once I became aware that most of my thoughts were about an eventual divorce or how unhappy I was. And I was like, my God, most of my thinking is along those lines. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's really good advice. And for those listening, I will have links to what Luis is talking about on our show notes page. So this will be episode 18. You can just go to thecuriouscouple.com, and I'll have links to whatever Luis is providing for us.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for tuning in and having me as a guest. It's been really awesome, guys.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Luis. And let's hopefully do it again.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of The Curious Couple for The Curious Ear with TNA. You can find us at thecuriouscouple.com, email us at thecuriouscpl@gmail.com, and find us at Twitter with the same handle. Be sure to check out sdc.com for your free one-month membership with our promo code 25648. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. We always appreciate your ratings and reviews. Catch you next time.